Congratulations! You found a Carl. This episode, we're taking one more turn with Dark Cloud. Welcome to One More Turn, a classic gaming podcast that's always free to play. I'm Jim.
And I'm Kevin. This week, Jim, we got a special guest on the show.
A special guest!
Well, you might know him from his gaming site, heylookatmygames.com. You might know him from his recent publication, or recent study of the comment section of old EGM magazines, which you can find at readingegm.tumblr.com. It's Cameron Conselman!
Hi. Hello.
You may also know him from a previous appearance on bonus episodes and interviews.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, how you doing, Cameron? How you feel? How does it feel to be on One More Turn, to be on this side?
It feels great. It feels wonderful. I get to see into your maybe your basement or your living room again while recording the podcast. I'm not really sure what room you're in. It's really great. Seeing Jim for the first time.
Yeah, it's a combination basement living room.
Yeah, okay, good.
I do most of my dungeon keeping here.
Good.
So Cameron,
I'm reviewing
how
the sausage is made for everyone right now. I'm giving them the look that I'm getting.
The casing's awful.
Oh no! When can we expect the investigative journalism piece about this later?
Well, I've got to pitch it first. We'll work it out.
So
you'll never believe what these amateur podcasters were up to.
So Cameron, you're a game builder. You're a world builder. We have something of a world building portion of our game today in Dark Cloud. But I'm curious, how do you feel deep down in your heart and your soul about baby's first game builder games? You know, your Mario Makers, which just got announced, your level editors in A Little Big Planet, you know, Minecraft, you know, it's a hugely popular medium with Minecraft. I know a guy who basically builds Minecraft levels, hosts them, and makes money off of that. I'm curious as to your thoughts.
Even still,
he has competition too. He has full competition. It's not just him.
Given Eula clarifications,
they've got until August 1st.
Okay.
Yeah, for people who aren't aware, Mojang recently clarified their EULA that said that you're no longer able to make money off of content in the game. So you can charge people to get on your server, but you can't then charge them for perks inside of that server, like, you know, admin rights, the ability to boot people or whatever. So
mm-hmm. Sure. That's what these guys do, is they do a server.
The ability to interact with blocks, $25.
Crafting.
$30. Yeah, they can't microtransaction you at that.
Yeah, basically.
So I'll just say from game building perspective or level design perspective, I had Load Runner growing up. I had a little game I've mentioned maybe before called Gary Kitchen's Game Maker, where you actually get to like draw and animate and then put that animation into a background that you've animated, basically make like a one screen kind of game. But I always kind of liked them, especially in Load Runner. I always like to build my own levels. There usually was a comedic theme to them. Like I had one level where I built and it's a human head and it was my face. And it was my face drinking milk, because when I was a kid, I drank a lot of milk. And then when you collect all the gold in Load Runner, special ladders appear. And the special ladders would be my hair going straight into the air. So, like, I kind of got a little kick out of them. I don't think any of them were Game of the Year worthy. But I always found level editors, level designer games kind of fun to just screw around in. I don't know. How about you?
Yeah, no, I think so. I don't know if I ever, I always found them fascinating and continue to find them fascinating while never doing anything with them, right? So, you know, when like, when the PlayStation 1 was big and we had, like even things like RPG Maker for the PS1 mm-hmm. and RPG Maker 2, I had this massive fetish for that, right? I read all the magazines and was really invested in that. But the moment I was able to touch it, I was like, this is too much work. I never, ever want to do this again. And that's the same way I feel about Little Big Planet or any of those. Like, I think they're wonderful tools, and I think lots of people have gotten started that way or find them really fulfilling. But it wasn't until I was able to do something, you know, with a game-making program, right? Not something that's mm-hmm. an add-on to a game that I enjoyed. Maybe it's because I never thought that, and I continue to not think that I'll measure up, right? Like, I'm not going to make a level that's as good as the worst Little Big Planet level, right? Like, it's never going to happen.
You're not going to make World 8-1 from the original Mario Brothers.
Exactly, right? Okay. So, it's always been this thing of, like, I think they're great. And, you know, I think other people have done a great job of pointing out why those things are helpful. So, Anna Anthropy's new book, ZZT, out of Boss Fight Books, I reviewed that for Paste recently, and it's just wonderful, right? She points at how a lot of game designers got started in these kinds of tools that were games that then shipped with the tools they used to create the game.
So,
Jim said a little bit earlier before we started the show, like games that ship with their own SDK and stuff like that. So they're all on this sort of spectrums. And I think the further we get abstracted, where you just give me the toy to play with rather than like the toy in the context of the game, I think I find that more fulfilling and fun. So I'm kind of the party pooper. I never made my own head in a game. I think your level's super clever and smart, but I never would have done that. I would have been like, I just need to make my 80-hour RPG. I just got to make it really good.
Got to have that hero's quest.
Got to have the hero's quest. What are you going to do?
What about you, Jim? Did you ever get into the level building craze, the world building craze?
See, I think not directly, because I think I was ultimately scared off by a lot of the Half-Life 1 SDK tools. I had the Team Fortress Classic addiction way back when, and that came packaged with its own with the Half-Life SDK, and oh my goodness, like looking up tutorials online. Now this one must have been like 1998, maybe 1999. So like we're typing in like AOL keyword Half-Life 1 SDK and working off of tutorials there. And let me tell you, like that is as intimidating as is possible. Now I kind of relate to that sort of anxiety that comes through with once you've seen this polished and finished product that 40 people were cramming 16-hour days and not seeing their families for weeks on end. And here I am as some 14-year-old punk who just wants to see a level made out of crowbars or something like that. it's really intimidating because like my only exposure to that has just been, again, these finished products. There's no idea of scope and scalability here that you see in a lot of cases now where a lot of level builders come into either like platform puzzlers, like your Meat Boys or V to the Sixth, or there's a number of different ones like that I see now. I think Hotline Miami might have it soon.
The second one, yeah, they announced a level editor, or I don't know exactly how it's going to work because there's a lot of like precision timing in that game, at least in the original.
And now I really enjoy the games are doing this, kind of going back to. It's almost like an extension from tabletop role-playing games in a way. When I'm thinking about Neverwinter Nights specifically, because that was like the major player in terms of, I'll say, AAA game transparency, where that is a game that, yes, it came packaged with a base story that was, you know, decidedly mediocre. It was generic. Generic.
I think Neverwinter is the one that someone redid Ultima 4 and 5. I gotta get my Ultima mention on every program here, Jim.
We've done it. We fulfilled the quota.
Yeah, quota. Check that box there. Okay.
Yeah.
I never thought of it that way. I gotta be honest with it too. I never thought of like all the people who had to build this thing. I would just, or even the manuals about how to build. I just would always approach them like, I need a couple basic pieces to like start. And then I'm just going to do whatever and then I'm just going to build from there. Like I just need I take as minimal instruction as I can and then start because I find that to be more of the fun part of it, the actual building of everything and failing and coming up with ideas that maybe the manual might not have, you know, an idea that the manual kind of is discouraging you from doing, like just playing around with that. I don't know. I don't think of the slave labor building the game or me not measuring up to the originals. Maybe that's my own hubris and ego. And I just was like, in my mind, I'm going to build the greatest level ever. It's just going to be 100 mushrooms I could jump on simultaneously, you know, in a row until I get 1,000 free guys, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think there are some that I wasn't so paralyzed in front of, like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4. Had mm-hmm. a park creating mode, and that I just went absolutely nuts. and would make like elaborate traps. Like imagine like if you were going to make a Spelunky level inside of Tony Hawk. So there were like obstacle courses and there were like really difficult pinpoint moves you had to make. And I would like make my friends play them. I did do that. And maybe that's like getting close to what you're talking about, Kevin, of this like just pure glee at making something in a skating game that you should never have made.
No, no. Yeah. Like rails that just go off into nothing and die. Yeah. You know, like edge falling off of a rail that just goes off to the edge of the world. Yeah.
I like that. It's like you're making an off-genre cover song, but you're doing it for a game instead.
No, absolutely. That's a really great way of putting it.
We'll be right back on One More Turn.
Welcome back to One More Turn, where we prefer to use the term lunar natives. I'm Jim.
And I'm Kevin.
And I'm Cameron.
So this week, Jim and Cameron, we are playing Level 5's very first game. History is kind of made with this game in Dark Cloud. Like I said, the very first, or at least the very first published Level 5 game. Level 5, as you may know, from Professor Layton. They did the Dragon Quest 8 and 9. Overseas, they're popular with Inazuma 11 and Ni no Kuni, if I'm pronouncing that right. If people know Ni no Kuni out there.
Yeah, the White Witch.
This came out in 2000, right about the same time as Phantasy Star Online. I'm not sure how many of these games are going to be relevant, but Phantasy Star Online, Devil May Cry, Mega Man Legends 2, which kind of has that same over, you know, behind the character combat stuff. You know, in the world of RPGs, you had Final Fantasy IX a few months before and Final Fantasy X a few months later. And then, of course, I threw in Conker's Bad Fur Day. I don't know if that has anything to do with this, other than, again, the...
I think you just have a leftover fever from E3, I think that's what it is.
I do. But the basic gameplay of this game is, I consider it in three parts. There is the dungeons, which are randomly generated. There is the Georama portion, which is you build each town back up after it's been destroyed, and you build it in the way you want to, Sims style. And then there is the actual, like, you go into those worlds you've built and, like, interact with characters. But before we get into all that, when we have a guest on, we ask them which games they want to play. And I guess my first question is, or my first thought is to you, Cameron. I mean, why did you suggest Dark Cloud? What was the reasoning behind it? Like, what were you thinking? Yeah,
I don't have
80 hours to spend.
Yeah. So this is partially what happened. And literally when I got the email back from you confirming Dark Cloud, I immediately began to despair because I knew I'd have to dive back into this game. But you asked me for a list of a few games and I think I gave you 7 and Dark Cloud was literally like the last one on the list.
I was like,
I'll just tack Dark Cloud on there. That's a game that's interesting from, you know, the time period that they kind of cover. And lo and behold, you returned Dark Cloud to me and gave me this horrible gift. A time-consuming...
Webcam high five, Kevin!
Yeah. Boom. When you gave me that list, I was like, Dark Cloud, oh, I've been wanting to do this for so long. Perfect. Like, I just jumped at the opportunity, not knowing what kind of waters I was diving into.
Really. We could have done Devil May Cry, just remember that. But yeah, so there's that. And also, like, I have a lot of positive memories of the game. I think it's an interesting game, and partially because of the sort of three things that you outlined before, right? That there is a dungeon, which I actually, until I started replaying, you know, in preparation for this podcast, didn't really think of it as a roguelike or a procedural death labyrinth or anything like that. You know, I just didn't remember that, I guess, or didn't think about that as part of it. And the idea that you could build the town, and that when you, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, later, but when you build the town, you can't, like, put certain people beside one another because they get angry. And you have to, like, micromanage the personal relationships of these people who are, like, all horrible JRPG stereotypes, some more offensive than others. And so, yeah, there's, like, all these, like, small working pieces. I don't know if the game is actually amazing, but all the little pieces, you know, operating together are all super cool and worth talking about, I think.
We played ActRaiser in the past, and in ActRaiser, we kind of mentioned that there's kind of these three different parts to ActRaiser, and none of them very felt connected to me, or at least in my playthrough of that. Whereas this one, I felt like the three parts did kind of have a better interconnection. You know, you have to go to the dungeons to get the pieces of the world, to then go build the world, to then come back and talk to people in that world, right, and figure out how it should be built.
Right. That's the entire premise of this, is the entire, well, all of these towns have just been destroyed, and then you're collecting them inside of these little, gapsha? What's the little orbs?
Atlas, yeah.
I know they're called like Atlas, but like the actual, they're like the little collector orbs that you get out of like quarter machines. Just inside of this one, you found, hey, you got your own house.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Georama, because the best part about it is, yeah, is you talk to the people when you go into town and they're like, hey, I don't want to live next to Bob. You know, don't put me near Bob. Put some a fence between us. Maybe put a road. Put as much distance between me and Bob as possible. And all I was thinking of is like, I went real technical, like land, like a city planner with that. And I'm like, hey, what if your house being next to Bob's is like good for the plumbing in the area? You know, or like, what if it's like, who cares about your selfish wants and needs? Like maybe there's a grander plan. Maybe there's something bureaucratic that needs to be done.
They could just be manipulating you, right? Like, they might have lived right beside one another before you recreated the town. They've spent the last 30 years with a deep next-door neighbor rivalry, and they're just not willing to do it anymore. You know, your plumbing be damned.
Now's a time for architectural rebirth, in a way. Because I'm wondering, why are these people still worried about all these old grudges that they have when literally their entire town was just destroyed by some giant deity? Like, don't you understand that there's kind of more important priorities here, people? I, as Toan, just save everybody. Otherwise, you'd all just be sitting here still around, like, being surrounded by weird bats and, like, little blocks that turn into cute little dog statues.
Yeah, it's very ungrateful. It's like, hey, thanks for releasing me from a frozen state, of an eternal frozen state, but could you, like, put me near the waterfall, please? Like, it's like, very ungrateful.
Yeah, there's a lot. I'm getting a real Shirley Jackson vibe from these small towns here, let me tell you. Like, these people, there's a lot going on here, and it's far darker than any weird dancing ritual to summon a genie from the past.
You also have to remember that you're, like, a 16-year-old child. And so all of these grown people are like, listen, teen, you better hurry up and move my house with your literal super magic powers.
Yeah, put a tree there, put a fence there. I don't want that lamppost there anymore. It's very, I'm almost like, as the person, as the character who's like, essentially has as much powerful as that dark genie, you're almost kind of like, yeah, like maybe this world should have stayed destroyed. You know,
you can that's see all it. Y'all, I'm taking all the lamps in my house.
As a gameplay mechanic, other, you know, jerks aside, I found it cool. I kind of like building a little town and like kind of having it be, I guess that might be the completionist in me, but when you get that 100% and when you put everything just right, like it's a big puzzle, there's something very satisfying about it, at least in my playthrough.
I have a question regarding this. So you often get prizes for finishing people's houses and making sure that all of their requests are fulfilled. Can you get through the game while not completely ignoring it, but like not focusing on 100%ing everything?
No, I don't think so. I think that it acts as a gate sometimes, and so they'll gate your progress. So like you have to have, like I think you have to have the shop, right? Like I don't think there's any way you can make it through the game without that. And I think there are like certain characters you have to get. So you have to like, you know, 100% the first 10 dungeons or something. Or the first 10 levels.
I know there's a couple, yeah, there's like story elements or plot advanced. Mm. Ways that the plot is advanced through building the town a certain way.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Like you can't get Zhao unless you finished your own house, for example. Mm-hmm. And she's necessary then for one of the first level, like one of the first dungeon floors.
I don't know. I kind of wish that, you know, they kind of did something with that in the second one too, but like, I kind of wish there'd be more kind of weird games like this where there is a world building element, but it's like, you know, not integral that you design your own levels. But in my playthrough of this, I couldn't help noticing, and maybe this is just my Nintendo fantasy or perspective on things, but I couldn't help noticing the Zelda comparisons on this as well. I know there's a lot more elements that are different, but, you know, main character in green.
It's the hat, just the hat.
The hat, yeah, the hat. A lot of characters who seem like ungrateful that you're helping them. There's this myth, there's this kind of myth storyboard or bookends to it. Like, you know, the game opens with like the book opening, and you know, it's supposed to be like a story, a fairy tale, essentially, which all the Zelda titles don't have that bookend, but they're supposed to be kind of like they're legends, you know, quote unquote. And I don't know. That led me into thinking about the dungeon part and the actual fighting mechanic and like things like that. I don't know how you felt about actually getting into these dungeons and destroying things and having to fight all this crap.
Oh, it's
having
awful
to go through all these levels.
Right? Like, on some weird level, the combat feels more like gambling than anything else. Because you just have to hope that your investment of, like, deciding to go to the next dungeon level will pay off in your sword not breaking immediately. Or, yeah, or that, like, your frames, you know, like, your attack frames will be slightly close enough to actually hit the hitbox of the bat. When that's, like, yeah, like not predictable whatsoever.
I missed, I guess with my Zelda comparison, I missed the laid out dungeons, mm-hmm, the pre-laid out dungeons where you kind of, if you go down a path, you can backtrack and be somewhat, you'll kind of know what you're backtracking to. In this game, when you get to each level, it's randomly generated. You don't know where any of the health, you know, there's these little ponds that give you health. You're just kind of out on your own a little bit. And if you haven't prepared or over prepared for that complete unknown, you might be screwed. Like, you might die. You might, yeah, lose a very valuable weapon, or you just might have to run through everything and hope that you don't get killed.
Like, so there is a definite dungeon crawler aspect to it, specific and kind of in the vein of, I'm drawing kind of comparisons between like the Persona. There's abstractions there made, obviously, but I was thinking like that Baroque a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite as just utterly obfuscating, confusing, and destroying of everything that I believed a game could be. Side note, can we do Baroque later? Anyway. and so one thing that a lot of games like this have is some sort of limiting mechanic to them, is that you can't just go just from like start to finish, just clear out a dungeon in one run. That's there's usually something in place to keep that, or there's some point just to purely like fence you off in a way from just being able to blow through the entire game in like 45 minutes. And in this case, it's kind of done through weapon damage and thirst, strangely. I didn't know we need two of them.
Yeah.
I've voiced out my opinion on Fire Emblem and weapon breaking in the past and how that's kind of a bullshit mechanic. But then also including thirst in there too is even more unusual. Like, I really liked that gambling comparison in there on whether the monster that you're attacking is going to provide necessary resources that you'll need possibly later on, whether it's in the form of a gem or additional powders.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you may just get stuck with broken weapons and having to continue go bother the mayor for more freebies and handouts.
Yeah, and I mean, it's good that you're pointing out the thirst, because that mechanic is brutal, right? Like, you only have three little bubbles to begin with, and they run out very quickly, and then your health just ticks down like you were poisoned. And I remember playing this when it was like a contemporary game, right? When it was not one more turn, but the first turn. And not understanding to begin with how the mechanic worked, and then when figuring that out, or after I figured that out, not being able to ever satiate my thirst. I just remember this being like a huge burden to play in this game. And I don't know if I ever actually finished the game when I played it to begin with. I mean, I put, you know, tens and tens of hours in it, but I don't know if I ever actually got to the end of the game.
I struggle with the thirst as well. I did not understand it. Because, yeah, you already had the weapons breaking. So I'm like, well, there you go. That's going to pull you out of the dungeon because you're going to have to get more repair powder. But then, yeah, the thirst thing, like, I was trying, like, over and over again, I was trying to, like, think, why did they put this in here? Like, what is the purpose of thirst? Like, because you're constantly, like, you know, you'll go into a dungeon, it's randomly generated, and each level usually has, like, a pond to, like, go replenish your thirst.
Mm-hmm.
Usually. I think it's a couple don't. And my attitude of it was like, well, why your first mission, obviously, whenever you get to a new level is to find the pond so that you don't dehydrate and die. But like, my attitude was like, well, why? Like, who cares? Like, why have this whole mechanic there? Like, who is that serving? You know, what purpose is that serving as me, the player, other than to be an annoyance, you know, and to
cause
prolong
massive
the
amounts
game.
Of anxiety.
Yeah, and just prolong the game, just make you come out of the dungeon more often and buy more water.
Yeah.
You know, go to the Naruna Village 7-Eleven and stock up on.
Does thirst ever, well, at least does water at least have a thematic impact to the game at all? Like, I might understand that a bit more if that is a major part later on, whether maybe like water's just very hard to find in this area.
No.
Nope.
You're picking up rivers out of those big orbs and you're just plopping down rivers wherever you want all over the thing. You can make a big lake if you wanted. Yeah.
But only in the town. I mean, see, this would be a much easier game if you just have a lake orb and you just drop it right where you are in the dungeon. Like, hey, great, it's pool party.
Yeah, exactly. That makes more sense to me. But no, it's just, there's no purpose other than seemingly to make you upset as a player.
Yeah. And maybe that's like why I think Dark Cloud is such an interesting game, is that it's sort of what I was talking about earlier, that it is made of these weird little parts. But then, like, as soon as you figure it out, you're like, all right, well, I guess I'm just thirsty all the time. So here we go. Here's 75 more hours of being thirsty.
I guess it's just a really humid world.
Yeah, I'm gonna fight like a giant genie that shoots lasers out of its belly button. And here we go.
Yeah, this is the worst LARP I've ever been a part of. Yeah, because not only does the thirst exist, but it exists separately for each person.
Yeah.
For each person in your party. Now, granted, I really enjoy how quickly you're able to switch through different members of your party. That's like, that's what I find many different games have maybe take a little too long with at times, is being able to, you know, one, manage your inventory, and two, manage your characters, especially when you're kind of bouncing in and out, which is also really cool that this pushes off for later, but on character leveling and the lack thereof. So switching between characters is not quite as needed off and on, except to actually combat enemies that you're fighting, and I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find it cool that nobody knows how to share a bottle of water.
Not yet. It's a selfish world. You have selfish citizens, you have selfish buddies up here on your side. We'll be right back on One More Turn.
Welcome back to One More Turn, where we've just dropped massive amounts of repair powder on our microphones. I'm Jim.
And I'm Kevin.
And I'm Cameron.
Okay, guys, so I kind of alluded to this a little bit beforehand, but weapon leveling. We're gonna level our weapons, not our characters. I think I've voiced in the past, I also have a strong aversion toward character leveling. I think that's kind of a cheap way to kind of feign an improvement in skill within the player. I feel it kind of removes that control from the player, as opposed to just being able to hit A a bunch, and then whoosh, your fireballs are now twice as large. But in this case, it really, we stuck that more to the weapons you were using, which are ultimately kind of random. You're at the mercy of, I guess, the dungeon that you're in, and being able to provide the weapons that you're then using, leveling, breaking, upgrading, merging, like what? Sorry, I want to get your thoughts on this entire mess. Like, it's a mess. I don't quite understand what's happening. I played this for a while, and I'm at a loss for words.
I think it's. I really like it. If partially just because I like the idea of a game that makes the player suffer, I'm a big fan of that, just as a design. And there is nothing more painful than having a weapon you like and that's really efficient, and, you know, that you've enchanted with those weird little orb things enough, and then running out of repair powder and breaking it on, like, trash mobs, right? Like, there's something beautiful about that. And I also like the idea that you can... So part of the leveling is upgrading them, you know, with these... elemental orbs, right? So lightning, fire, whatever. And I love the idea that you can upgrade yourself into a corner and make a weapon that doesn't damage enemies and only damages itself, right? That makes it actively harder to play the game. This is sort of going back to the, you know, talking about, is this a roguelike? Is it a procedural Death Labyrinth kind of thing? Like, that's the cool little core. It's another one of those little pieces that I think doesn't really fit well. And I agree with you, Jim, that I don't really know what to do with it, right? It seems like it's a system that someone talked themselves through, right? Like, they were like, you know, it'd be really cool, right? So you could take a dagger and you could make it like the biggest sword ever, right? You know, have like lightning and fire on it. And someone was like, all right, well, I guess we can, we'll make that. Okay. That's fine. And then that's yeah, what like we got in the game.
Well, they try to design around it a little bit so that you're not too limited with all these extra characters. Mm-hmm. So that you build up one character in fire, sword is fire, and then you build up another character and maybe you build up his weapon in a different affinity. But yeah, what it requires is a lot more leveling up in a way. You got to level up like five swords now with various affinities and elements embedded in them. And now you have to level all of them up kind of for each character as well, because different weapons for each character do different damage to different enemy types. So you are not really, so you have six people you're using, and rather than just leveling up one weapon each for them, you're leveling up three or four, and now you're leveling up essentially 24 things and going through these same dungeons over and over. It almost creates more leveling, in my opinion, or more of repetition in a way. It's almost a worse scenario than the character level up.
My question, well, actually, to both of you, to Kevin and Cameron, when you're playing through this now, is this a game, or at least specifically, is this mechanic something that requires having game FAQs open on your phone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, is this really, can you legitimately cripple yourself enough by having upgrading your Chris knife instead of a different sword, something that you just don't know caps out a little bit earlier than other blades do? And then what do you do with that?
Yeah, it was probably a bigger problem in the sequel, in the second one, Dark Cloud 2, because that one had, like, think of all the weapons in this and how they level up. It's like triple that in that game. Yeah, it is. I feel like you had to buy the strategy guide on this one when it came out. You had to have the game FAQ up. And looking, like, I remember I bought the strategy guide a couple weeks after I originally played through some of this game, because it had like a map, essentially a development chart of every sword, every weapon in the game. And I think that was like a third of the book was like how everything levels up.
Well, right. They can't draw dungeon maps or anything like that.
No. So it was necessary, which kind of sucks in a way, that because I hate going to FAQs. Honestly, I feel like that takes away from some of the experience of the game. But at some point, you got to beat it. You know,
where else would you go to vote between who wins in a fight between Link and a T-block?
Yeah, I don't know. I that's me personally. I don't know. What do you think, Cameron? You sound like you enjoy the torture of it, having to start all over again. But me, I think it limits the advancement of the story and of the game.
Yeah,
at some point it does.
Yeah, I kind of like that. Like, I enjoy games. I don't know if I enjoy playing them. I like them on like an intellectual and on design level. Mm-hmm. A game that will make you quit playing it, right? I've right. called this before. I've called those games that hate you, right? So games like Dark Souls, games like Spelunky, right? So these games that have a really high barrier to entry. And so in the case of Dark Cloud, it's a barrier to entry around knowledge, completely knowledge, right? You got to have that chart or be willing to mm-hmm. draw the chart. And so, yeah, I don't know. Like like I said earlier, when I actually played it, I ignored all of that and just sort of bumbled my way through it horribly, right? And you know, this is probably involved in why I never actually completed this game. is that I, you know, sort of self-fulfilled what I like about the game. But yeah, so I don't know. I'm sort of in the middle, right? Like, I don't know if I would ever, when playing this game, and when I started playing it again, I didn't try to power game it, right? I didn't look on game FAQs. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh yeah, you can slot in a lightning gem. Heck yeah, I'm going to put that in my dagger. My dagger plus one, or whatever. which probably isn't the best way to do it. So, I don't know. I also play games wrong. Clearly.
Yeah. Well, what's funny about it is, and I'm talking about in terms of advancing the story, is if you've made the wrong choices in the game, and you, but you don't want to go back through some dungeon and find that sword or weapon again in order to recraft. Mm-hmm. It makes the ending of this game, the last level, incredibly difficult if you don't have like a lot of variations on your swords, or if you don't have like, if you don't bring like five fully customizable and differing weapons into that final level, because that final level is a pain in the ass. Like, it probably will make you want to quit because, two things happen in it. I forget if it's every level or every other level. As you go through the dungeon levels, your thirst meter drops at twice the rate. So that happens. And second, you are forced in some levels to only use one character. So you mm-hmm. cannot, if you've leveled up Tone stuff and you've left Goro to the side for too long, and now you have to use Goro, you are screwed. You have to leave and go level and spend 10 hours leveling all his stuff up in order just to play one little section of the game and beat one little section of the game. So in that manner, that's where the weaponing and the leveling system gets frustrating, is what you've mastered or how you've, the playstyle you prefer, with the players you prefer, you're going to have to use a different playstyle at some point at the end in order to beat it. Like, they force you to use other playstyles, or at least other characters.
Well, it sounds like you didn't save the universe, Kevin. That's what that sounds like to me. It sounds like you didn't want it enough, and everyone got stuck, or just destroyed. They didn't even get to live in their little orbs forever.
Yeah. Under the tyrannous rule of Captain Flag? Was that, what was it? The Snidely Whiplash character.
Yeah.
Vague fascist Nazi guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Flag, which I don't know if that was just a direct Stephen King reference, or if it was just like, if that's a common bad guy name is Flag. Stephen Flag, he's in Stephen King novels.
Randall Flag, yeah, we got it. We were following along, Kevin. We got
it. Help me out, Cameron. Help me out. Jim's giving me question.
A reused, sort of metaverse name in Stephen King.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I guess that, I mean, we're getting to the ending here of the game.
I don't even know if we've covered even the beginning of it. But ultimately, like, was there, like, here's going to be my question, I guess, regarding the story then, is, was there anything interesting in how this game's story panned out? Can we talk a little bit, I guess, about Sita, right? Sita, Seta. I feel like 25 mm-hmm. minutes of every Seta. Episode is now debating character pronunciation.
Yeah. The guy who basically created the Dark Genie and made all this bad stuff happen. Right. That character, correct? Old man Sita in your time, yet somehow he's only like a teenager mm-hmm. 500 years ago in the game. Yeah. So he, there was a war between East and West in this world. Terra, I think the world's Terra, right? Terra, he needed a little, his country was getting kind of overrun. So he calls on, basically he calls on some wizard to tell him, to say, hey, how do I stop this? Wizard tells him, you need to create the Dark Genie.
Make a deal with the devil.
Sita creates the dark, deal with the devil situation. Sita, who is still pure of heart, does it and saves his people. But kind of in the process, he loses the love of his life, Sophia. And that, Something about losing her makes the Dark Genie darker. I don't know exactly why. I was trying to figure out why that. I don't know why they had made him have a love interest. I was trying to figure that out.
The story of this game is perhaps the least interesting thing about it.
Yeah,
I think we can safely say that if we have to jump through 50 hoops to like even make sense of it. And maybe, right, like maybe the interesting thing about it to me is not this grand overarching story, and that's not the strength of Dark Cloud, but the smaller pieces, right? So when you complete a house, right? So like the Macho Brothers, the first one you do, really struck me, right? That it's like, mm-hmm. you get the younger brother first and he's like, hey, can you find my brother for me? And you like go down and you beat up some skeletons or whatever. You come up, you bring his brother back. And as soon as they get back, they just start punching one another. And right, and so you get, there's like this weird brotherly love about it, but there's also like they're big strong men and they've got to prove that. And like, that's this little micro narrative that you get. You get a full arc for those two people, and then you never have to worry about them again, right? You never have to go back to their house. And that's super cool. And there's no time travel involved. And, you know, I think that's a little bit more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, mm-hmm. like the little stories of each town are more important than this big. The overarching thing is just some way to loosely connect it yeah. and make you move forward. But it got that's usually another part of the reason I don't like the time dungeons. The end. You're like this part of the story is really boring. I want to go back and solve all the townspeople's problems, yeah. even if they're kind of jerks yeah. about it. You know.
Right, yeah, but as you said, like, their vignettes are a bit more fascinating than, because ultimately, like, even just look at, like, the first dungeon. The first dungeon's gonna take you a considerable mm-hmm. amount of time for just one order, which is just find the beast god, find Dran, and that is what, like, a fifth of the game, a sixth of the game? It's just mm-hmm. find this, or get to whatever MacGuffin is at the end of this dungeon.
Create the giant robot that fights the dark genie. Like, that is more interesting. I think, you know what? I think probably the problem with the story is why the vignettes work as opposed to the overarching story is that Tone, who's the main character, Tuon, or Tone, whatever you want to pronounce it, he is not an interesting character in any way. He is a blank slate avatar.
He's got a cool poncho, though.
He's got a really cool poncho. And that is, you know, that's a problem a lot of games have, is they make their characters a blank slate and not someone who you want to connect with or is interesting. And maybe that is why this overarching narrative is dull and lame. Mm-hmm. You know, at least mm-hmm. Keith Carradine in the Karate TV show, he had a nice backstory, you know. You're basically doing the same thing here. Kung Fu, the legend continues here. You're just going from town to town, helping people out. All right. So finally, we've explored the dungeons. We've rebuilt all these towns. We've saved the world. We've attacked Dark Genie with a giant robot. What are your final thoughts, Cameron, on Dark Cloud? If you could put a pin in this, where would you place it? And what would you think? What do you think of this game?
Oh, I mean, I think it's a wonderful, and I mean, I guess this is sort of my return that I keep going to, but like, it's a wonderful, maybe, a lot of wonderful muscle on top of a really boring skeleton, right? Like, a skeleton I don't particularly care for. But like those, you know, those like Achilles tendons and like the shoulder muscles, those are super cool. But yeah, so that's where I think I put it. I like the game. I think I'm going to, like, I've played a few hours of it in preparation for this. I'm going to complete it and I'll probably write something about it in the end. I mean, I'm more interested, I think, in taking the parts that really work and trying to rework those and put them into something else and maybe make a game that's in the Dark Cloud lineage. Because I think there are lots of things that do work. Like, everything that we've positively mm-hmm. reacted to here isn't really brought in other contemporary games, right? I don't think very many contemporary games scratch the itch that Dark Cloud does, especially around the Georama stuff. So that's it. I think those are my two things to say about it.
Sure. Now, I can certainly agree that I think mechanically there was a lot of fascinating detail in that and really like unique mechanics that I don't see in a lot of places. Specifically, again, kind of going back to your gambling analogy, that when I am playing a character running through a dungeon, you're like, I pretend to kind of just my instinct is just a Tasmanian devil through the entire thing. Mm-hmm. Is you're just a whirlwind of blades and swords, and if you happen to make it to the end, great. Otherwise, you just reboot the darn thing. And in this case, like, you don't see that. Every sword slash needs, well, not, I don't necessarily everyone. We're gonna exaggerate this. So that every sword slash there needs to be a predicted value out of it. And you need to really kind of consider the use, not only the usage, but the construction of your equipment in a way. It's like your weapons are a form of art where you're creating this beautiful work and that every time you use it, it could just be destroyed forever. it's like if you're Medusa and you have a fascination with glass ornaments. You just know that, like, yes, they look beautiful, but just, you know, just, the light hits something just a little incorrectly, it's all over.
I was going to go Andrew Goldsworthy with your comparison there.
Oh, I was going to go to VHS tapes. But every time you watch it, it's just closer and closer to destruction.
Okay, you're Medusa with a VHS collection.
You're wearing the tape out every time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm in the same vein. I think, like, I'll probably complete this. Like, I plan to finish it as well, get myself a better copy.
You sound kind of dejected as you're saying that. Like, Yeah, I'll finish it.
Well, but it's, you know what it is? I think it's a little bit of that Pokemon thing where you're not just collecting stuff. At least this is why I engaged with it. You're not just collecting, but then you're collecting and using those things in a real way. And a lot of games just have you collect and collect and collect. And then what you collect is just meaningless, essentially. It's just points, essentially. Whereas here, you're going through all these dungeons and you're collecting, and you are then using those in a real way with the Giorama stuff. So I enjoyed it. Yeah, story is kind of dumb. The overarching story is kind of lame, but the rest of it I feel is solid. I feel like I feel like if they made a Dark Cloud 3, made it a little nicer, I would be all over it. Well, I wouldn't buy a new system for it, but I'd be all over it. I'd figure out a way to be all over it. So, Cameron, where can people find you? Where can people, if they're looking to follow Cameron Kunzelman, if they're looking to check out your work, if you have any things you want to plug at the moment?
Okay. So I'm doing Reading EGM, which you plugged at the top. I have Patreon. Patreon.com/CKunzelman. We can probably put that in the show notes, I imagine, something like that. You can find me on Twitter @CKunzelman. You can find me on Facebook with my name. I'm doing all kinds of stuff all the time. I write quite often for Paste Magazine for their game section. I'm doing a art residency right now for the Center for Use Interpretation, where I'm sort of making game art that's a little bit related to the EGM stuff I've been doing. So that's worth looking at. Just Google the Center for Use Interpretation. It's a really cool art residency program. If anyone listening is an artist who's working in new media art, definitely apply. It's really cool. Beyond that, I wear 1,000 different hats, as I think I was saying before the show, and I do a lot of stuff. Also, if there are any people who want to become game developers, need resources, need someone to talk to, someone to look over a design document, I'm always available for that kind of thing. So I'm a busy person.
Thank you for listening. One More Turn is produced, created, and hosted by Jim Stuholsky and Kevin King. We want to thank our guest today, Cameron Kunzelman, for being on the show. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions about today's game, Dark Cloud, or our topic on game building games, or if you have anything about Cameron, just email us at onemoreturnpodcast@gmail.com. Help us out. Rate us out on iTunes or other popular podcasting sites. If you want to follow me or comment me directly, you can tweet me @KingSorbo. Jim is
@FuzziestKitty.
Cameron is
@CKunzelman.
IED is courtesy of Pixel Hate off his album End the Revolution. You can find more of his music at pixelh8.co.uk. Blue Pain is courtesy of Breakbeat Heartbeat and the Waveform Generators off his album 2206. You can find more Breakbeat music at soundcloud.com/breakbeatheartbeat.
Kevin, what are we going to do next week?
Show and tell, Jim. Show and tell.
Whoop, whoop.